The draft, we're still talking about it because it was big, obviously, and it was dramatic as far as the Buffalo Bills are concerned. A lot of that drama is on display for you right now on our website, buffalobills.com. If you go to the Bills Focus Story, it's been up about 24 hours. The Bills Draft Room exclusive video is there. An accompanying piece, website story written by Bills insider Chris Brown, on the clock, Whaley's decisive deal-making. Chris Brown, the fourth and final installment of his On the Clock series, and he was there in the draft room while the Buffalo Bills went through their maneuvering for the NFL draft. And Chris Brown, Bills insider, is on the line with us live right now. Chris, thanks very much for coming on with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Good to be with you, Murph.
Yeah, you don't sound convinced. I mean, we love these On the Clock features. This is the fourth of four of them. They've all been outstanding, Chris. Really great work and great in-depth stuff that you can't really get anywhere else.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. We did put a lot of extra work in. You even helped me out with a couple of interviews when you were down at the owners' meetings talking to Rick Spielman. So we really did try to canvas the NFL and not just necessarily one Bills drive, as we usually do, just to kind of broaden the perspective a little bit with some of these stories we covered. But, yeah, this last one was all Bills. And, you know, we had the fortunate seat in the draft room where we could really kind of witness everything and really play that fly on the wall role. And I mean, we were pretty eager to get in there, especially with all the pre-draft talk about the Bills seeming willingness to move up in the draft to try to get one of the elite prospects in round one.
Yeah, this last one was all Bills, and this last one was all access, Chris. And I know you've been in the draft room before for other drafts, but have you ever been in there in a more dramatic setting as far as what the Bills were trying to do on the first day of the draft?
I was in there in 2004 when Tom Donahoe traded back into the bottom of the first round to get J.P. Lossman. I remember that one pretty vividly because we had just finished the press conference after they took Lee Evans, 13th overall, if I remember right, and so I'm wrapping up with that press conference. I'm making my way back to the draft room, and I walk in, and I think every telephone is being used in there. John Guy, who was the director of pro personnel at the time, he was in charge of being the point man and calling other teams, and he was basically calling them one after another at 19, 20, 21, and then finally at 22, he was able to swing a deal with Dallas, and then they moved up to 22nd, but it was pretty harried in there during that period of time. I wouldn't say there was as much commotion for this. It seemed like they had kind of mapped it out. And I suppose when there are only three picks ahead of where you want to get, maybe it's an easier roadmap to follow. And they had conversations with Cleveland GM Ray Farmer, and you know, as we saw in our Bills Focus video feature, it got a little hairy at the end, but they made it work.
Chris Brown is on the line with us, Bills insider. His on-the-clock feature, Whaley's decisive deal-making, with the video to support it, Bills Focus, about what the draft room was like on Thursday and Friday. Well, you mentioned Doug Whaley and how it wasn't that crazy in the draft room, Chris. A lot of us didn't know what to expect from Doug Whaley. This was his first draft as a general manager, but from the look of it on the video and the sound of it from what you write, it sounds like Doug Whaley was very even-keeled and, as you point out, very decisive. He wasn't hemming and hawing about some of the stuff that was going on in there.
I was the thing that really struck me just observing him for 3 days in the GM's chair. There was never a moment in time, whether time was ticking, and it literally was with the Cleveland deal, or any deal on day two or day three. When he was presented with an offer, it would take him all of about 2 or 3 seconds to either reject it, say, that doesn't sound too bad, but let me call you back, or, yeah, we'll do that. He was open for business, as he said, and he meant it. And it wasn't until after the draft when I had an opportunity to sit down with him and really kind of fill in all of the blanks that maybe I was not within earshot of from my vantage point in the draft room, because they've got the TV up loud in there with the ESPN coverage, so sometimes you can't hear all the conversations at the head table. But I found out why it's so easy for him to be so decisive. When he was in Pittsburgh working in the personnel department there, he was operating the trade phone. It was his job to get in contact with the other teams with their offers for trades and to hear their offers in return or their counteroffers. And I would think after 11 years of doing that, if you don't have the trade value chart memorized or know what is an equitable deal off the top of your head, you're never going to know it. I think he used those 11 years, and he put them to good use, because it's certainly helping him now, and I think it's one of the main reasons why he was as decisive as he was in his first year as the trigger man.
Live on the line with Chris Brown, Bills Insider from BuffaloBills.com. If you have a comment or a question for Chris, lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Chris was in the draft room when the Bills made their maneuvers on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday this past weekend, so if you have any questions about that, you can give us a call. Well, Chris, let's start with the trade-up to get Sammy Watkins. We talked about this, I think you were on the show like a week ago, 6 days ago at least. There were so the reports that Buffalo was trying to trade up were so persistent, it could not have been a surprise that they went into that with some of the groundwork already laid when it came to making a move up into the draft, huh?
Yeah, they did find out pretty quickly that Houston was committed to their pick at one, because they did call them to see what it would take to get up there. And Houston had pretty much resigned themselves to the fact that they were going to take Clowney, because no offers were going to be good enough to justify swapping out at one. So, you know, that was off the table pretty quickly early in the day on draft day. And then, you know, pick two, they kind of had an idea as to what was going to happen there with St. Louis. They did talk to them. As you know, Les Snead is probably one of the biggest wheeler dealers in the league and is not afraid to move up and down the board at a moment's notice. But they were pretty committed to a player that they had in mind, and most people suspected it was Robinson, the offensive tackle. And the real unknown was Jacksonville at three. And Doug Whaley had assigned Russ Brandon to try to work some intel there with David Caldwell, who he knows pretty well, to try to get a feeling. But as Jim Mona said in our video package, they never let on, never tipped who they were leaning towards. And so that really kind of became, you know, the big question mark, and it's where the draft really pivoted, because Clowney goes first, Robinson goes second, Sammy Watkins is still on the board here, but there was certainly a distinct possibility that Jacksonville could take the receiver, knowing that the receiver they took just a couple of years ago was probably not going to be playing this year, whose name's escaping me now, the kid from Oklahoma State.
Justin Blackmon.
Justin Blackmon, thank you. So, you know, there was certainly a chance they could take Watkins there at three, but once they took Blake Bortles, there were smiles at the head table, and Doug Whaley was on the phone in about 3 seconds after Kevin Megank, you know, relayed what they were telling him from the table in New York. You know, Sean Gibson shouted down the phone line and said, Jacksonville sending in the pick, and it's Blake Bortles. So he was on the phone right away calling Cleveland, and, you know, then it was calls back and forth. But, I mean, as soon as the Bortles pick's made, the clock's running,
yep.
And there's only 10 minutes, and there were a lot of back and forth and counter offers going on there, and it got a little squirrely there at the end.
Well, and actually, and it's pointed out in the video, and you documented in your story, the Browns actually said to, I guess said to Doug Whaley, we'll get back to you in a minute, which kind of derailed everything for a few seconds anyway.
Right, and the reason why was because they were getting another call, and I talked to Doug about that. I said, how long do those 30 seconds feel when you hear the GM on the other end of the line, who you've been negotiating with probably for the better part of a week, and now you've got the terms pretty much set, and he says, hold on, I got another call. I'll call you back in 30 seconds. He said it felt like 30 minutes. But actually, Farmer called back in less than 30 seconds. It was probably in 15 seconds he was back on the line. They both went over the terms, and then they sent it in, because by the time they called back, they were already down to about 6.5 minutes on the clock. So now Jim Overdorf's got to call the league with the trade terms, get them approved. Rob Hanrahan's got to send him in electronically on email. And then they've got to get Sammy Watkins on the phone, make sure he didn't break his leg the night before or get arrested or anything else. So he called Sammy Watkins, and as soon as they found out he was okay and he was healthy, you know, they sent the pick in probably with about 4.5 minutes left.
Wow. Chris Brown is on the line with us, Bills Insider at BuffaloBills.com, and he was in the draft room over the weekend with the Bills. You can see the video. It's up right now, the Bills Focus video piece, and Chris's piece, On the Clock, Whaley's Decisive Deal-Making. Well, on Friday, the offer was there for the Bills to move around, and it started right away, it appears, on Friday night in the second round, Chris, huh?
Well, yeah, I mean, they saw Bishop Sankey go to Tennessee down there in the bottom half of the second round, and to that point, no running back had been taken. And the Bills admitted they were in the market to add a young running back, and so they wanted to get in on the action, figuring the run was going to start right there. And so Jim Oberdorf got on the line, and he was starting to call every team after that Tennessee pick, trying to trade back up into the bottom of the second round. And they had initially offered their 3 and their 5, and then they upped the ante to a 3 and a 4, which was more in line with the proper value, at least on the trade value chart. Unfortunately, the next pick was Jeremy Hill, so he was off the board. And then another team, I can't remember who, had traded right up into that area to take a wide receiver. I want to say it was Denver. They swapped out with San Francisco. Denver took Cody Latimer there.
Yep.
So they were trying desperately to make a trade with Miami, but Miami did not want to trade out of the round. You know, and the Bills were offering a 3 and a 4, but they didn't want to trade out of the second round completely. They wanted to get just lower in the second round. And the only team that was able to offer them that was San Francisco. And so San Francisco offered their second round pick at 61 along with something else, and that was agreeable to the Dolphins. They only had to slide back 4 picks and pick up an extra selection and stay in the round. And that was really the deal that made the most sense to Miami. And Doug Whaley even called Miami back and said, hey, why'd you do the deal with them? I mean, he had an idea why, but he wanted to hear it from Miami. And the GM there, Hickey, had said, look, we wanted to stay in round 2. San Francisco could offer us that, so that's why we took the deal with them. And, you know, Whaley wasn't sore about it or anything. It made sense to him also. But that was an example of the Bills still trying to be active even when it didn't work out. They were still trying. So they wanted Carlos Hyde and admitted as much, but San Francisco is the team that ended up with him.
And speaking of trades, there are a couple others I want to ask you about. This one did not, I don't think, occurred in the draft room, but the Stevie Johnson deal with San Francisco. Sounds like the groundwork for that had been laid fairly early before the draft, I guess, right?
Yeah, about a week or so before, you know, the Pro Personnel Department just told people they were open for business. If you're interested in any players on our roster, let us know. You know, we'll talk to you about anything if we feel it's a benefit for our team as well. And Doug Whaley was adamant about that. He said, nobody was mentioned specifically. We just left the door open for teams to come to us if they were interested in any particular players. So San Francisco called Friday morning, and, you know, Trent Baalke pretty much told Doug Whaley, hey, we're interested in Stevie Johnson. What might it take to get something done to get him off your roster? And so they had talked back and forth, and as Doug described it to me, after they had a couple of, probably about half a dozen initial phone calls, the call where it got down to the nitty-gritty, they talked probably for the better part of an hour and a half on and off, trying to cement the terms that they felt were equitable for both sides. And, you know, they end up getting that conditional pick. San Francisco gets Stevie Johnson, and really I think this is going to give an opportunity to Robert Woods to really flourish in that slot role.
And then finally the Saturday deal, which was, what, a year in the making for running back Bryce Brown and the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, that was that one took a really long time. They estimated it was about a year and a half in the making. It was almost since the time that the Eagles had gotten Bryce Brown on their roster, not long after. They just had a crowded backfield. I think they knew that Bryce Brown really didn't have a long-term future where he was going to get a ton of opportunities in Philadelphia with LeSean McCoy there, and that was only exacerbated by their offseason addition of Darren Sproles. So I think they had a young player with low mileage that they felt they could get a good return on, and certainly he was attractive to the Bills, especially after they lost out on the running back run. So it was a situation where, you know, they tried to talk with them, but Doug Whaley was a little dismayed by how things were going, and it got to a point where he just put the trade opportunity out of his mind. And then Friday, you know, Russ Brandon, he kind of delegated it to him. He said, look, I got to focus on day 3 of the draft coming up here. If you can make something happen, more power to you. Take it and run with it. I got to focus on day 3. And so Russ really kind of worked things out with Howie Roseman, and eventually they came to terms and swung the trade. And, you know, after a year and a half, they finally got their hands on Bryce Brown, who they think a lot of. At 6'2", 223, I mean, he's got speed to burn, but he can run between the tackles.
Hey, Chris, it sounds like, from your observation anyway, it sounds like everyone had a role to play in that draft room for the Bills, even Russ Brandon and Jim Oberdorf. Everybody had, like, an assigned role to play in there.
Yeah, I mean, Jim Oberdorf kind of works the trade phone. You know, Doug Majewski gets players on the phone line. You even have you know, a guy like Rob Hanrahan in the pro scouting department. He was handling all the trade terms electronically on email. Jim Monas was kind of working some of the phones, too, to kind of feel out other teams. Russ was assigned some other teams, and Doug would be in contact with other teams. And Doug Whaley was telling me the reason he does that is so you don't cross your lines and mix information, because that can get you in some real trouble. You tell the wrong information to the wrong team, and then the team you told the information about sore at you, and then you've compromised your open lines of communication. So it sounded like Doug had a handful of teams, Jim Monas had a handful of teams, and Russ had a handful of teams to kind of keep in touch with and feel each other out to see which way some teams might be leaning with their respective picks. And then even Doug Marrone, towards the end of the draft, he started penciling down roster numbers because he saw who they had drafted already, and he basically said to the guys at the head table, okay, I need two safeties, I need no running backs, you know, I need one guard, and he kind of laid out the position groupings. So as they started getting ready with the undrafted free agents to make phone calls at the end of the draft, they knew what their numbers had to be and where.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, you and I made note of the fact that by the end of the draft on Saturday, if you go back to the end of last year's draft, the 2013 draft, the Bills, under Doug Whaley, essentially, have made eight trades involving picks and or players in a league where trades aren't that common. What does that tell you about Doug Whaley and his vision for that job?
Well, it's a lesson that he learned from the late Bill Nunn, who just passed this past week. I was talking to him and to Kelvin Fisher about Bill Nunn, who was a long-time personnel man with the Steelers and really had a tight connection with a lot of the black colleges and actually set up an all-star game for the black college players back in the day. And so that was an in that the Steelers wanted to take advantage of, and they hired him as a personnel man. And he really was basically a mentor for a ton of Pittsburgh personnel men that came through the pipeline probably over the better part of the last 20, 30 years. And he said the number one lesson I learned from him was don't be afraid to make a deal. If it sounds like it's a balanced deal and equitable for both sides, don't be afraid to pull the trigger, especially if you believe in the commodity that you're getting, be it a player or a pick. So I think Doug took that to heart, and maybe he was channeling a little of Bill Nunn this weekend when he was the trigger man here for the Bills.
Well, it sounds like it was pretty fun in there, Chris. We appreciate you coming on tonight to talk about it, and I advise our listeners, you can read about it too, Chris Brown's On the Clock feature, Whaley's Decisive Deal-Making. It's up there along with the video, On the Clock. Chris, thanks very much for coming on the air tonight to talk with us about it.
Always a pleasure, Murph.
Chris Brown, lead journalist, Bills Insider at BuffaloBills.com. Whaley's Decisive Deal-Making, the fourth and final installment of his On the Clock series, sponsored by Dunn Tire. And the video piece is outstanding. Bills Focus inside Buffalo's draft room. That's been up for about 24 hours now. It comes with the highest recommendation. Very dramatic. Pretty cool stuff. Check it out at BuffaloBills.com.